Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News, online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park.
After the events of September 11th, 2001, football star Pat Tillman left behind a multi-million dollar NFL contract to join the U.S. Army. He was deployed to Iraq and later to Afghanistan, where he was killed in 2004. At the time, his obituary said he was a selfless patriot killed by the enemy while fighting to save his men. Pat Tillman did love his country and his fellow Army Rangers, but the rest of that story, how he died, was false. The Army knew soon after he died that Tillman was killed accidentally by members of his own unit. It would be more than a month before Pat's mother, Mary Tillman, found out her son died from so-called friendly fire. The new book, Boots on the Ground by Dusk, is her tribute to Pat and the story of her family's fight to find the truth. Mary joins us here in the studio now. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mary, when you heard the original explanation of Pat's death, that he was killed when he was running up the mountain to protect his fellow soldiers against enemy combatants, why were you suspicious? As you describe him in the book, it certainly would have been within his character to be a hero in this way. What were the red flags for you that stood out?
Well, yeah, Pat was a morally courageous person, physically and morally courageous person. We never had any doubts about that. And to say that we were suspicious right off the bat is probably not exactly true, although the story was so contrived, seemed so contrived, that I think it was unsettling to all of us. But we never really said anything to each other. It was sort of like, how odd that this would be what happened. Plus, it didn't make sense that that Pat would have been almost foolhardy. It sounded like he was running up into, you know, up towards the enemy as they're shooting at him. Is the way that didn't sound like something that he would do.
Sounds almost reckless.
Exactly. And Pat was a risk taker. There's no doubt about that. But he was calculated risk taker. Something like that really didn't sound like him. In fact, my youngest son said, you know, that story never made sense because Pat wasn't that stupid, you know. Mm-hmm. But we never really said much about it. It was sort of, we were all in shock and we just sort of took what was told to us as fact. But
when did that change?
Well, that changed. My son Kevin served with his brother, although he wasn't there when his brother was killed. But Kevin was actually the first person told that it was a friendly fire, so to speak, fratricide situation. And then my daughter-in-law was told. I was actually told by a reporter from the Arizona Republic. They learned that the next of kin had been told, which was true. My son and my daughter-in-law had been told, but they wanted to tell us in person. So a reporter actually told me, and a colonel from Fort Lewis came and talked to us about what happened. But 3 weeks later, when we went to Fort Lewis to get the official briefing, the story changed. Very crucial differences. The time of, or not the time of day necessarily, but the visibility, the distance, the fact that the AMF soldier, the Afghan militia soldier that was killed with Pat, or near Pat, we were told he was in a standing position and shot 8 times in the chest. And then 3 weeks later, we were told he was in a prone position.
And one of the big red flags was the fact that his unit was split in two, which is unusual.
Yes.
They were split on in different paths, going through a very precarious valley in Afghanistan, which wasn't necessarily normal protocol.
Right. They did break their protocol. For one, they were traveling during daylight hours when there had been an edict sort of sent out that they were not to travel during daylight hours, although it did happen. And then the splitting of the troops is not usual practice. And what's really tragic about it is the platoon leader argued vehemently not to split his platoon. And the officers at the Tactical Operations Center disregarded his request.
You mentioned that Kevin, his brother, who was serving also in Afghanistan at the time, was one of the first. He was the first to find out about the fratricide,
yeah,
the friendly fire. Pat's fellow soldiers as well, other soldiers said that they immediately knew, or they quickly discovered that it was friendly fire. Their commanders did too. This is what one soldier told CBS about that day.
We knew. I just don't understand why nobody told Pat's parents or told his brother right away. They took the honor away from what we were doing by lying to his family.
That was a clip from the interview on 60 Minutes. It did take, as we said, the Pentagon 5 weeks to tell you Pat was killed by his own men. How do you make sense of that? What's responsible for that delay?
Well, I think, first of all, Pat, you know, was the most high-profile soldier in this particular war. And to have him killed by friendly fire was certainly an embarrassment for the military, I mean, to say the least. But I think what made it worse is that April 2004 was in the same week Pat died, the Abu Ghraib prison scandal was breaking. You know, there was total pandemonium in Fallujah. The president's approval rating was atrocious. And there were the most casualties of the war at that point in the war. So I think that all of that made it even worse. And I think that the administration, I will go so far as to say the administration believed that this was, you know, something that just couldn't be admitted to, that they thought it, number one, that it was, you know, terribly embarrassing, and they thought they could also use it as an opportunity. In fact, in one of the documents, Brigadier General Jones did an investigation, and he spoke with a General Yellen when he asked him, what was the general tone when you learned of Pat Tillman's death in the chain of command? And he said, well, it was like it was a steak dinner, but we're giving it to you in a garbage can cover. You've got it. You work it. In other words, Pat's death was, you know, in their mind, something positive that they could use. Unfortunately, he died at the hands of his own men, so they were going to have to spin the story.
The Army has said repeatedly it didn't try to hide anything. There was no cover-up. They admitted to have made mistakes in how they revealed this information. They did punish several soldiers, including high-ranking generals. They apologized directly to your family. Yet, you still believe that there was some kind of level of deceit that is going on?
Well, there was, you know, they slapped people on the wrist. They did do that. They took away a three-star general's star. But they, to say they were punished, I'm not so sure that they received the proper or adequate punishment. And, you know, but the point is they did cover it up, and they didn't make mistakes. I mean, sure, there were probably mistakes made. There's always mistakes and errors and everything, but there was a conscious effort to deceive. Pat's uniform, his equipment, was destroyed.
Which is not usual if it's an investigation about friendly fire.
Absolutely. You know, in fact, in December of 2003, they received an edict saying that, you know, all of the uniforms and equipment of soldiers who died in suspected fratricide situations, suspected suicide, or suspected execution, those uniforms needed to be sent back to the medical examiner. And in Pat's case, they were not. They told us, or the military told Kevin, all of his things were destroyed because they were a biohazard. But Pat's own body was a biohazard, and his body was very well preserved according to the medical examiner. So the uniform, if it had gone back with him, on him, would have been preserved as well. And it's valuable evidence. Not only that, the medical examiner wants this equipment because it allows them to know, is the equipment working?
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about Pat's brother, Kevin, who we've mentioned now was there. He was in the back of that convoy that day. He escorted Pat's remains home, and how did he feel? How did he respond to getting a false story about his brother's death? I mean, being in the military, how has this affected his career?
Well, Kevin was never a career military. Neither one of them intended to go in as a career, and he did fulfill his tour. You know, his tour of duty. He stayed his full 3 years. It was absolutely devastating, obviously, to him, and very disillusioning. You know, he trusted the people he was serving with, and he trusted his chain of command, and all that changed.
You didn't want Pat to join the Army. In your book, you talk about what was essentially a family intervention when Pat and Kevin revealed that they wanted to enlist after September 11th. What did Pat tell you were his motivations? How did he justify this decision to you?
Well, I think Pat had many motivations, not all of which he talked about. So I don't like to speak for him.
Sure.
I know that he and Kevin were very, disturbed by what happened on September 11th, as everyone was. But I think that they felt that, you know, being in sports, you know, was kind of you know, trivial at this point. It didn't have the same significance, and other young people were serving, and they felt it was their duty. And, of course, I have great respect for the military. I still do.
You have a lot of military history in your family.
Yes, definitely, and I still do. And, you know, there's going to be shady characters in any organization or institution. But I think what disturbed me about them enlisting was, frankly, this administration. And I'm a registered Republican. That might shock people. I haven't voted that way for a while, but I'm still a registered Republican. But this administration disturbed me in part because none of them served. They all professed to support the Vietnam War, yet none of them served. And yet they're sending young people, you know, to fight. And at this point, we hadn't become involved in Iraq. And the mainstream, you know, really wasn't aware that this was, you know, being
planned. It was about Afghanistan.
This was about Afghanistan. But it still kind of concerned me that this particular president and his cabinet were going to be sending people, you know, to a war situation. And so, you know, I talked to the boys about that. So did their uncle and other family members. And their response was, you know, that when something like this happens, a tragedy like this happens, you can't choose the administration. You have to hope that they're going to make the right decisions for them. And soldiers lose their voice, of course, and they were very aware of that. And it's the public that becomes their voice. And if the public is apathetic to what's going on, you know, it's dangerous.
Pat himself, before he was deployed, expressed that he had his own fears that if he died over there, that death would be used as propaganda. Is that some of what fueled you in your personal investigation? He had already kind of planted the seeds in your mind?
Oh, yeah. Well, partly just because Pat would want this. I mean, that's just Pat's personality. But they tried to use Pat before he was killed. They tried to talk him into just going to Washington and just being a recruiter. Mm-hmm. And he didn't believe in recruiting people. He would never do that. And so I think that it was natural for him to worry that if he died, what were they going to do?
As your family has searched for these answers, you yourself have filled a lot of different roles. You've become a journalist, spokesperson, a detective, a military analyst by default. This has consumed you for many years. How has that changed who you are, this process?
Well, I guess I don't look at it that way. That's very complimentary of you to say that. But I don't really look at it that way. It's just that it's something I had to do. And it has consumed me. But at the same time, I want to make it clear to people that, you know, it's consumed our whole family to a degree. But we all also, because Pat was in our life and because he was the kind of person he was, you know, we are still moving on in our other areas of our life. This is not something that we're not, you know, down in the mouth kind of family that, you know, can't move on because we've been described that way, and it's very offensive. You know, we all have a good sense of humor. You know, when we're all together, it's like Pat's in the room. You know, so I just want to make it clear, you know, we are moving on, but this is a responsibility we have not only to Pat's legacy and his memory, but to other families, because Pat had a persona that gave us a voice. To not use that voice would be neglectful.
Could I ask you a question? Mary, do you think that by concentrating as you have on the cover-up, have you been able to think a lot about the accident itself? Have you made peace with that? Have you just said, you know, it's a tragic fact of war?
Well, I think that actually, you know, friendly fire is a tragic fact of war. We all are pretty clear about that. But I do think that this was not a fog of war like the military wants to describe it. These soldiers were in a situation in the canyon that was very frightening. And I don't take that away at all. Kevin was in there and he said it was scary. But I think at the point that the soldiers in this vehicle got out of that canyon, they were no longer being fired upon. That's very clear in the documents. I think they were actually not afraid when they got out of the canyon. And they had this adrenaline surge, and they just started shooting it up because they wanted to. They said things like they were excited, they wanted to be in a firefight. They were shooting so wildly, they nearly shot the soldiers in the vehicle behind them. So I think this was a situation where it was a less to fight. And that in itself is a crime. They disregarded rules of engagement.
Has it been strange to have to re-engage in these conversations? I know you've been talking to a lot of media over the last couple of days surrounding the release of your book. Is it hard to go back and have to rehash this day after day now?
Well, it's not really. I mean, I've rehashed it so much. I mean, I've talked about it so much. It's like it's just part of what I'm doing to help, you know, Pat, and to help other people. I am kind of tired of the sound of my own voice. But, if people want to hear this and are willing to listen, I'm willing to talk.
Mary Tillman, the mother of Pat Tillman, who died in Afghanistan, was killed in 2004. She has a new book out chronicling that event and her family's search for the truth surrounding Pat's death. It's called Boots on the Ground by Dusk. Mary, thanks very much.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.